over the administration here over the last year that's been in office, it has done so much to undermine the working relationship with our strong Western partners and also international organizations and institutions. And now we need them. And this administration is going to need them. But having said that, I think that perhaps there are very more realistic
And so you would work with the Europeans to seek sanctions against Iran?
Yes, I have to. There's no way that we, as a single country, can select the Iranian regime and the Iranian policy generally. And that's the only way we can help them to take the lead and see that the world is not there. So we can do the opposite. We have to work with others in the focus process that we can't do it.
Mr. Lomar, let me...
...the institutions as well as the allies for the administration. It performs in that way. If you compare that to the former institution, he did a very good job of building an international coalition that was basic to the major share of the expenses as well as the manpower.
Let me take you back home. I interviewed an economist today who described what I think we've all seen before our eyes, which is that workers in America, the average American is working harder and longer just to stay even. People are in debt more than ever before. A lot of times it's gone from one person in the family working to two people working. What would you do to help the ordinary or even lower income Americans achieve a better chance at equal opportunity?
That's a very good question. I've been talking about what I call the middle class week. And I can look at myself and my family as they say. I'm a typical Fairfax County resident. And yet I realize my first overseas job in my time. I was probably making around $25 a year. I bought a nice home and a nice community for $40,000. If I were coming back to the same office 2 or 3 years later, I knew she would make
So what specific policies would you advocate? Sitting to my right, actually, is Andrew Hearst, your opponent in the Democratic primary, and I strongly urge all our listeners to vote for either you or Mr. Hearst, whoever should win the primary election tomorrow. I think either of you are leagues above Tom Davis, but there are some differences between the two of you. I'm going to ask him the same question. What would you say, though, Mr. Longmire, is the major difference between you and Mr. Hearst?
Here, if you're a high concern,
What is your position on the recent prescription health care bill for seniors under Medicaid care that was just passed by the administration a few years ago, just went into effect? What would you do with regard to lobbyist reform? There's been a lot of corruption in Washington from Jack Abramoff and a whole bunch of others, a lot of Republicans in Congress. What would you do differently? Mr. Lombard, we only have a few seconds left. They say all politics is local. What specifically would you do for the people of Fairfax County, Prince William County, if you were elected to Congress? Ken Longmire, I'm sorry to have to cut you off. That's all the time we have. Thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. I do appreciate. Coming up next is his opponent, Andrew Hurst, right after this. I went over. I'm sorry. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We are having very short breaks because we want to get so much in before the Virginia primary tomorrow. Sitting to my right, to your left, of course, is Andrew Hurst. He is a longstanding attorney and a litigator, someone actually who represented the Clinton-Gore administration against the special prosecutor Kenneth Starr. He is running against Ken Longmire in the Democratic primary, and I certainly have no bone in that fight. Actually, I don't live in the district, but I would urge that you vote for either him or Mr. Longmire over Tom Davis, because I personally am tired of yes men in the Bush administration. Andrew Hurst, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me tonight.
Well, let me ask you this. The same question I asked Ken Longmire. Why are you running for Congress?
Yeah, I'm really just really tired, like a lot of Americans, of, as you said, having yes men for George Bush in Congress, and even more so the way they do business. As a Washington attorney, someone who's worked in the area for a long time and done a lot of federal work, I see how Congress has given itself to the special interests and others and not passing legislation that benefit all of us. And I think it's time for a change in that, in the way they do business down there.
What issues, if you had to pick two or three, are your most important issues the first day you're elected to Congress?
I think campaign finance and ethics reform are two big issues for me, and the war in Iraq. That's
okay.
What our campaign.
Well, let me ask you, campaign finance and ethics reform, what would you do differently?
I would change, number one, the way campaigns are financed. And the Medicare Part D bill you mentioned before is a great example. While that Medicare Part D legislation was being passed by Congress, pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies, others were giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Republican majority in Congress, and they were accepting that and passing legislation that affected all of us. I would not allow special interests to fund campaigns in the way they do.
How would you change it?
I would change the number one. My first proposal will be public financing of campaigns. It's time to get private interests out of it and let people run on the merits of their ideas. If people want to influence the way legislation is done, they should come up with great ideas and bring it down there. Their money shouldn't count. apart from that, if people aren't ready to do that yet, we should change the amount of limits and have hybrid public financing plans like the state of Arizona has, where limited amounts of money are brought in and public financing is brought in limited levels.
By the way, folks, for this, you are welcome to call in. All of you can call in and make your voice heard, and you can ask Mr. Hurst any questions you want. The toll-free number is 888-488-6275, 888-488-6275. So if you don't like my questions, you can ask them your own, and they'll be fed to me, and I'll ask them. Let me ask you about your second point. You said about Iraq. What would you do differently from the current administration?
No, I supported the MIRTHA plan from the get-go. I think our troop presence there is not doing any good for the country or for our country, and in fact is creating a civil war there. We're creating a target for a group to be there, and we're dividing the country into people who support the U.S. and don't support the U.S. presence. Our removal of troops, as John MIRTHA proposed at the earliest possible moment, will start to get Iraq toward the process of doing what it should be doing.
Let me bring you back home. Education is an issue that's often talked about. It's, of course, at the federal level, there are only certain things you can do. How do you feel about No Child Left Behind?
I think it's a terrible bill. And, you know, as a Democrat on the trail, I've heard that from the get-go, not only as a parent of three children in the public school system, but someone who has heard it from constituents. And one thing we did in the campaign, this is a big difference between my opponent and I, is not only did I say this is bad legislation, complain about it, but I did some research and put proposals on how to fix it.
And so, how would you fix it?
Well, one thing to do, and I'll just give you some examples. Our website has a very detailed proposal, but one example is giving schools, first of all, fully funding the program. I mean, George Bush passed this program that sets a lot of standards, but didn't give counties like Fairfax County the adequate money to implement it. So one thing I would require Congress to do when we pass legislation like that is fund our mandates. But here's another example. We have schools that don't have English as a first language for a lot of its students. And this creates issues with those schools meeting the standards that are created by No Child Left Behind. We would create, you know, certain aspects of the program that would fully fund and create definitive materials for these people so they could have a chance at passing these standards and give schools a chance at really meeting the standards that were created by the Bush administration.
We have a caller, actually, Ken from Alexandria. He wants to know if you think this is more of a national election this November or a local election.
Well, I think it's very much a national election. I mean, to some extent, this 11th district election will be a referendum on George Bush and the Bush administration and the Republicans in Congress in general. Tom Davis has been a local leader here for a long time. He's very well known in the community. He's very popular at a very local level. He goes to ball games. He goes to barbecues. I mean, everyone in our district has seen him at some point or
another.
He's
a nice guy.
He's a very nice fella, and he's voted for the Bush administration hands down. And I think if we run a campaign where people in this district learn how much Tom Davis has supported the administration, I believe they'll vote him out, which they have other Republicans who have supported Republican administrations like Connie Morella.
One of the things I found most interesting is that during the Clinton administration, the Republican Congress would issue subpoena after subpoena. There were more than 1,000 subpoenas issued. They would investigate everything Clinton did, even the hairdresser he went to. And yet under this administration, neither Tom Davis nor any Republican in Congress has seen fit to issue a single subpoena to require the administration to answer questions on anything, Katrina, domestic spying, the war in Iraq, anything. How would you do different?
Well, I'll tell you, it has been a surreal world. And as an attorney who had to answer a lot of those subpoenas and deal with a lot of those investigations, you're not even talking about the half of it, what the Republicans did to the Clinton administration. And the issues that are going on now are far worse in scope and in problems created for the country than anything that happened in the Clinton-Gore administration. The first thing I do is get on these committees and start issuing subpoenas and start holding the administration to task on a lot of the issues. The wiretapping that happened in this country, the fact that Congress is not investigating that, is a travesty. Weapons of mass destruction, Halliburton contracting. You go down a list of issues that Congress has declined to get involved in, and instead Tom Davis has held hearings on steroids and baseball and other issues that people don't care about. Terry Schiavo, he's chosen to subpoena Terry Schiavo from her deathbed rather than investigate George Bush's handling of weapons of mass destruction.
Okay, well, you've easily persuaded me that you're better than Tom Davis. Of course, Ken Longmire also persuaded me that he's better than Tom Davis. So I have to ask you the real question that Virginians are facing tomorrow. November, the decision's easy, folks, but tomorrow's a tough decision. How would you distinguish yourself from your opponent?
Well, I think there's a couple of things this campaign, my campaign, has brought to this race. First of all, it's energy and resources to take on Tom Davis. As Ken said, he ran in the last race and lost by 22 points. John Kerry, who did not do very much in this district, only lost by half a point. So there are Democrats here. There are people who are willing to stand up to the Bush administration. They need to be motivated and reached. Our campaign brings a volunteer base that's been unprecedented in this race before. You look at our website, you'll see the detailed proposals we put work into. And I urge all of your viewers to take a look at both the web pages and see who's got the ideas that can take Tom Davis on this fall. In addition, you know, one thing we bring, Ken talked a lot about international experience, and that's important, but it's also important to have domestic experience. I'm going to partner at a law firm here who's dealt with federal legislation for more than 10 years. I can take apart federal statutes, put them back together, and I know the problems that people in Congress has had in passing laws and how to make better ones domestically.
What specifically have you done with federal legislation?
Oh, I've represented companies in many different kinds. I do a lot of healthcare work, for example, and I've helped companies, you know, navigate the legislation that Congress has passed has been so detrimental not only to people who receive health care, but people who are trying to administer it. And we've had to take apart statute time and time again that's being created by special interests that don't help anyone in the system at all. So doing that kind of work, I've come to appreciate what improvements we can make in the system. Medicare Part D is a great example, you said. That's a terrible bill. One example is that the legislation was created specifically so that Medicare program can't negotiate prices with drug providers. Now, Medicare's largest purchaser of pharmaceuticals on earth right now, and they're not allowed to negotiate a price, whereas VA, another agency, pays about a third less than Medicare does for drugs because they're allowed to do so.
Now, of course, it's easy to point at the problems. A lot of Republicans and independents complain, Democrats say the Bush administration has problems all the time. Health care is a great example. That is a very difficult problem. Hillary Clinton tried very hard to fix it, and, you know, she kind of went down in flames. What would you do, not just to tell me that the prescription drug bill is bad, I agree with you, what would you do to actually provide health care for people who need it and not cost too much for either taxpayers or individuals?
It's a great point. Democrats sometimes try to take the whole problem on at once. We need to take it on bit by bit and improve the system. I'll give you one quick example. More than 60% of the people who are uninsured in the country work for small businesses. We need to find a way, and I've got a proposal on my website again, to take small businesses and pull their purchasing power. See, one of the reasons small businesses can't insure their employees, they can't afford it. Whereas, you know, people like ExxonMobil or other huge companies pay a lot less for their insurance. So we propose a voluntary government program that would be kickstarted by the government, wouldn't cost very much money, that would take small businesses, combine their resources, and allow them to purchase medical insurance from insurers at a price that's comparable to big companies. This would allow small companies to be able to afford their packages and give their employees insurance. And that would handle not only the amount of people who are uninsured in the country, but give them more quality insurance. And it would save the system money, because when people are insured, they'll do regular care as opposed to using the emergency room as their primary care doctor.
Now, of course, it is a national election, probably more so than any time since 1994 when the Republicans took Congress, but there were always local issues. You represent a section of Fairfax County, a section of Prince William County. What locally can you do to help voters in those counties?
I'll tell you one great proposal we have on there, and this is something that starts nationally but has local effects. You all heard about the Bridge to Nowhere was built in Alaska.
Right, right.
We have a great proposal on our website that talks about earmarking reform, would change the way money is delegated to states. So Republican senators from Alaska or Wyoming or these states where they don't have transportation that Northern Virginia has, they don't have needs there, we've catered a program and we're going to propose it to Congress about special needs districts that would be created in places like Northern Virginia where they would get a fair share of transportation money and money wouldn't be sent to places for pork barrel spending by powerful people in Congress. That's what we can do. As a representative of people in Northern Virginia, we can create fair rules that would allocate money and resources in a way that's reflected by the problems that actually
exist. How do we do that without spending too much? Would you have to repeal the Bush tax cuts?
I would do that anyway.
Okay.
These kind of reforms wouldn't create money. I mean, this is just changing where the money goes. You wouldn't be putting money in places that really don't need it. I mean, another great example I had recently was spending with the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, Wyoming and Montana are getting more money. New York and Washington are getting less. The pool of money isn't changing, but the way we spend it is. But on the Bush tax cuts, I mean, the estate tax is a great example. The Bush is trying to get the estate tax permanently repealed, and this tax doesn't benefit anyone but the upper class. And it's taking money out of our deficit. It's creating a deficit problem. More than 10% of the deficit problem could be solved if they did not repeal the estate tax.
How do you feel about a woman's right to choose?
I think I'm 100% pro-choice. I don't have any equivocation about that.
Okay. How about the more complicated issues like affirmative action? What's your view on that?
I think affirmative action has done well for this country, and I believe in it in certain forms going forward. I as a person, I'm a white Anglo-Saxon male in the law firm world, and I can see where women and minorities still don't receive the same benefits that I do as a white Anglo-Saxon male. And I think affirmative action is one kind of remedy that can fix that in certain areas. I think it's very important areas, for example, like government contracting, where we have to get people involved in that. I can see in my own practice how programs like the 8A program and other disadvantaged businesses programs have helped the minority community come along in our area especially.
One more question, and we only have a few seconds left, but on the environment, I live near a power plant that pollutes in the air, the Morant plant. I know Jim Morant's working on that. What can you do to help the environment?
Well, we've got a great, again, on the website, a great proposal on global warming that I think is the most important issue environmentally this country's ever faced, the world has ever faced. And there's things the federal government can do. We propose, for example, a reforestation program, a national reforestation program, that would do a lot to get rid of greenhouse gas issues. And, again, I urge you to go on the site and go through.
I have to cut you off. No, that's okay. I'm running out of time. Mr. Hirsch, thank you very much for coming on the Inside Scoop. Coming up next, we have Judy Fetter. She is running against Frank Wolf, which is also in our district. And I think, folks, it's time for a change. Whatever you do, whoever you vote for, get out and vote tomorrow. Don't miss your chance. We'll be right back after this.
measure the health of a society at the base, not at the top, and that our responsibility is to protect the people who have no power in the quarters of power.
And how would you do that, Secretary Webb? What specifically would you do in terms of health care or workers' wages or education in a way, these sort of traditional democratic principles, to help the average Virginian get a better chance at life?
I think we need to focus on all of those issues, and that begins with focusing on workers' rights. I am a supporter of the unions. I believe that if you look at where, you know, where the unions have been able to help the working people, that they end up having these benefits. And one of the reasons that they're disappearing, if you look at, for instance, health care, it's disappearing right in the middle. The people who have no income have Medicare. The people at the top have fairly good insurance. But that hole usually was the place where the unions were taking care of the workers. We need to move toward a system where every American is able to have access to preventive medical care. And the first step to me in that is to revitalize collective bargaining, which is very difficult to do when we're outsourcing so many of our jobs and the average worker has lost his ability to negotiate with an employer when there's no union.
The Democratic Party has long been a supporter of civil rights and a woman's right to choose whether or not to have an abortion. What's your view on that issue?
I support Roe v. Wade, and I would also say this was a decision like most people I came to after a great deal of thought, and it's something that most abortions end up having been a tragedy. I'm not someone who, avows this as a birth control method, et cetera, but the point is that we need to get the government out of our private lives, and there are so many situations in which a woman should have to look inside herself and make those decisions early on, that Roe v. Wade, I believe, is the way to go.
How about fiscal responsibility? A lot of the complaints about Republicans these days is they're leaving a massive debt for our children. And yet the Republicans continue to cut taxes, mostly for people who are, dying with millions of dollars, the investor class, not so much for the common worker. Where would you change tax and spending policy?
Well, the first thing you have to do is to end the war in Iraq. One of the reasons that we lost our budget surplus was this explosion in spending after 9/11, a lot of it totally irresponsible, some of it on experimental programs, and then others on this misguided endeavor, which is now the price tag is probably near $500 billion, and I've seen estimates up to $2 trillion. And that doesn't include the indirect costs, such tripling of the price of a barrel of oil since we went in. The first place to start is there. The second place is to go into programs that are in place that should be properly looked at by the Congress. When you've doubled the number of lobbyists in Washington in this administration, you have these situations where we're earmarking pieces of legislation that never should have been passed. That's wasteful.
Well, we only have a few seconds left. What's your view on the Bush tax cuts, the estate tax, and the cuts for dividends and capital gains?
Generally, I think if you're in a war, you shouldn't be extending tax cuts. The estate tax, you have to look at very carefully, because the way that it's now structured, it goes to people who have family farms and this sort of thing. I think it's a $2 million gate on it. And, if there's a lot of the value of land in a lot of places has put people in jeopardy. But properly placed, I believe that there's a place for it, particularly when you're in a war.
Secretary Webb, you've answered a lot of questions the last 12 minutes. I want to thank you very much for taking the time just before Election Day to come here on the Inside Scoop, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Bye.
It's never too early to start planning for your retirement. Since 1921, NARF has fought to protect and improve the earned retirement benefits of federal retirees, employees, and their families. There's strength in numbers. Join NARF now and boost the voice that speaks on behalf of protecting your future.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Also running for the Senate for Virginia to oppose George Allen is Harris Miller. He is a businessman. He's a longtime Democratic Party activist in Fairfax County, and he's the president of the Information Technology Association of America. In fact, he was just endorsed by the Washington Post for the job of senator. Harris Miller, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me today. I'm really excited to be on with you.
Now tell me this. Why are you running for senator?
Because this country is headed in the wrong direction. Washington is broken, and George Allen is a major part of the problem. I have the ability as a business person, as a Mark Warner Democrat, to go in and make real changes to get this country going back in the right direction.
Okay, let's talk about those real changes, and I want you to be specific.
Number one, we have to focus on education and training, and I mean in a fundamental way. We can't tinker around the edges. We have global competition from countries like India and China, and they're not playing second place. And yet we're actually cutting funds for programs like college student loans. We're cutting back. There's not enough money for Head Start. A second area is we have to get control of the fiscal mess in Washington. We have a $9 trillion debt. When George Allen and George Bush came to office, we were running surpluses under Bill Clinton and Chuck Robb. Now we're running these massive deficits. We need to go back to a pay-as-you-go system so we have a balanced budget. Thirdly, we need to get off of this incredible dependence on foreign oil. This is totally unacceptable. We need to focus on alternative energy. We need to raise fuel mileage standards. Fourthly, we need a health care system that works for all Americans. The current program not only leaves 47 million uninsured, many of those who are insured have benefits that are so low that they're virtually worthless. And we need to get our troops home from Iraq. George Bush and George Allen misled us into the war. They continue to support it blindly. They have no exit strategy. And we also need to fire Donald Rumsfeld, the architect of this disaster.
Well, I'll tell you, all these ideas sound good. Of course, George Allen is a yes man for the administration. He seems to agree with them, 95-97% of the time. How would you be different from George Allen? How would you investigate this administration in a way that he has not?
Well, I think that what is fundamentally broken down is the fact that we have a separation of powers. Our own Virginia's James Madison recognized we had three equal constitutional branches of government. George Bush doesn't believe that, doesn't believe it at all, and George Allen doesn't believe it. That's why he voted with the president 97% of the time. George Allen's job is not to be a rubber stamp for George Bush. It's to look out for the interests of the people of Virginia and the people of the United States. As a U.S. senator, I will decide what's best for the Commonwealth of Virginia and its voters and its citizens, not what's best for one individual the way that George Allen does.
Now, as I mentioned to you when I met you and also mentioned in my interview with Secretary Webb, I'm your classic Democratic voter. I will vote for the winner of tomorrow's primary, but I'm still undecided as to who to vote for. And I'll tell you, and I promise you I was hard on Secretary Webb as well, but what I talk with Democrats about you, they like a lot of your ideas, but they're concerned, and they're concerned that you won't be able to beat George Allen, that Jim Webb might have a better chance as an ex-Marine and an ex-Republican, for that matter, to beat George Allen. Tell me if you think you can beat George Allen. I'm sure you do. Tell me why.
Well, absolutely I can beat George Allen. You know, that stuff's coming out of the Webb campaign. You know, Miller can't win because it's all these talking heads in Washington. Well, today the number one Democrat in the Commonwealth of Virginia spoke out. That was Mark Warner. And Mark Warner basically told the press that that's hogwash, that I have just as good a chance as Jim Webb of beating George Allen. That's just a misspread by people in Washington who have never even been to Virginia. The Virginia people are supporting me, people throughout this Commonwealth, the elected officials in Virginia, not elected officials in Nevada and New York. I've also gotten the endorsement of the Washington Post, the Richmond Free Press, because they know that I can take it to Senator Allen, that I have the credentials to be a clear alternative, that I have the ability to reach out to independent voters and disaffected Republicans. As a Mark Warner Democrat, I'm much more likely to be victorious than somebody who's never been part of the Democratic Party.
Now, they do call you the more thoughtful candidate, and the Washington Post, it was a very nice endorsement. So I've got a tough question for you as the former president of the Information Technology Association of America. We've done a program right here on the Inside Scoop on Internet neutrality, and folks, it sounds complicated, but it's something that really affects you. It's a question of whether all of us can access the Internet fairly or whether telecommunications companies can, in effect, restrict which sites we can go to, maybe charges for the Internet. There's a bill that's coming up called the COPE Act that would largely end Internet neutrality. I'm wondering if you have a position on that.
I firmly support net neutrality and would fight with every ounce of my senatorial power to stop any efforts to discriminate among users on the Internet. The beauty of the Internet, the power of the Internet, the strength of the Internet that I've been the leading advocate for around this country for the last 11 years is that it's available to everyone and should be available to everyone. And the idea that some big corporations want to come in and discriminate against people based on how much time they use it or how much money they have is totally unacceptable to me. and should be firmly rejected by the U.S. Senate.
I'm really glad to hear that. Let me ask you about some sort of basic bread and butter Democratic issues. Are you pro-choice?
Yes, I am pro-choice, but we also have to do everything possible to discourage unwanted pregnancies. And George Allen has voted against things like sex education, for example. The only way we're going to stop teenage pregnancies, or at least cut them down substantially, is to focus on things like education.
And how do you feel about the Bush tax cuts and the general issue of our massive debt?
As I mentioned before, the debt is totally unacceptable. We're spending more on interest payments alone this year than we are on the combined budgets. The combined budgets of the Department of the Navy, the Department of Homeland Security, the National Institutes of Health, the Coast Guard, the Border Patrol, the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, Head Start. That is outrageous. We're spending more interest payments than defending our country, educating our children, and protecting our borders. We need to change it, and we cannot extend any tax cuts and even consider extension of tax cuts unless there's a way to pay for them. And that's been the most outrageous behavior of the Bush administration and George Allen. They're not cutting taxes. What they're doing is they're deferring them to the next generation. They're deferring the next generation. They're cutting taxes for the rich people today who are friends of George Bush, those that Dick Cheney hasn't managed to shoot yet, and they're passing those tax increases on to my children and our grandchildren. There are no tax cuts. They're just passing it along.
Mr. Miller, what would you do differently from George Bush and George Allen on the issue of Homeland Security?
Homeland Security is a joke under the Bush administration, as demonstrated under Hurricane Katrina. It is totally dysfunctional, and the fact that he put a political hack in Michael Brown in charge of the Federal Emergency Management Agency gives you some idea about how much respect he really has for Homeland Security. I'm afraid, I'm disappointed to say this, but it's actually a more dangerous world today than it was on 9/11. We haven't made progress against terrorism. We've actually gone backwards. I want to see total reorganization of the Department of Homeland Security, take FEMA out of Homeland Security, and reestablishment as a separate professional organization the way it was under Bill Clinton, and make sure that we're really beginning to protect the people of the United States against the terrorist threats.
Mr. Miller, one of the reasons why many people think the Democrats are going to do well in November is because of the corruption in Washington, the corruption of Tom DeLay, everyone, Duke Cunningham taking bribes, and a lot of that corruption centers around lobbyists. In fact, I know one of the Democratic bills is to restrict the activities of lobbyists. You, sir, have been a lobbyist. How do you address the issue of corruption in Washington when you yourself have been a lobbyist?
Number one, I'm not going to apologize for a second for being the number one promoter of the U.S. Internet around the United States. The IT industry that I represented brought more than 60,000 new jobs to Virginia the last 6 years. 60,000 new jobs. And when I take my message around Virginia, particularly to places like Southside and Southwest, which just feel totally cut off from the new economy, they're excited about the message that I bring there. In terms of campaign reform, I've taken a very radical position. People in Washington, Democrats and Republicans alike, don't understand how frustrated voters are. We can't just make minor changes. We have to make maximum changes. First of all, no gifts at all. No gifts at all from lobbyists for U.S. senators or congressmen. Why should they be able to buy them lunch? Look, George Allen makes $165,000 a year. He doesn't need anybody to buy him lunch. He doesn't need anybody to buy him trips. Secondly, we need to get toward public financing of campaigns and away from this idea that people who are running for office are constantly on a money trail. And the way we do that is by allowing candidates access to our public airways. Underscore the word public. Every other country of the world allows their major party candidates a reasonable amount of free access to the public airways. In this country, we have to pay for it, which means we're on a constant money-raising treadmill, which gives the lobbyists too much power. Number three, no earmarks, no special pork barrel projects. Last year, George Allen voted for 13,000 of them. We need to get rid of them. That will also help to take lobbyists out of the process.
Yeah, and in fact, this broadcast right here is one of those things that is sponsored by you know, cable access, sponsored by the government. In a sense, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing this program. Let me ask you, one of the major things that people are concerned about, and this is all across the state of Virginia, all across the United States, is declining real wages, that workers, after inflation, are losing money. The average American, sure, people at the very top are doing okay, but the average worker has to work longer hours just to stay even. There's greater debt. What can you do as Senator from Virginia, Mr. Miller, to help the average worker, the median worker, maybe the lower income workers, to have the same equal opportunity in America that those at the upper end have?
First of all, we need to raise the federal minimum wage. As you know, it has not been increased since 1996. It's been a decade, $5.15. And I've called for an immediate increase to $7.25. Secondly, we need to make it easier for those employees who want to consider joining a union to do so. And I support the union, so-called union checkoff bill, so that employers can't simply stand in the way of people who want to consider joining a union. Thirdly, we need to have a serious refocusing on employment and training of our workers. You know, in many countries around the world, particularly our economic competitors, if you lose your job or your, for whatever reason, because it goes offshore, because your company goes bankrupt, whatever the reason might be, they provide interest-free loans so you can get retrained or reeducated if you need that to get a new job. Not in the U.S. of A. If you lose a job, you're on your own. That's not helping us be competitive. So those kind of activities would enable the middle-class workers who are getting squeezed by the super-rich to have a real chance to move ahead. This generation, led by George Bush and George Allen, is the most selfish generation we've had in over 100 years. My campaign is all about the future. I personally am living the American dream. I grew up very poor in a small town in western Pennsylvania. But through hard work and education, I was able to get a good education and become successful in my almost 30 years here in Virginia. The next generation is not going to have that opportunity unless we look to the future, and that's the major theme of my campaign.
Mr. Miller, you've answered a lot of tough questions, and you've answered them well. Thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
It's an honor being on your program, and keep up the great work of educating the people here in Northern Virginia about key issues.
Thanks again.
Take care now.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're live in the studio with another person that will be on the ballot tomorrow. She's running unopposed, but she will not be running unopposed in November. Her name is Judy Fetter. She is a resident of Northern Virginia for more than 30 years and currently the dean of Georgetown University Public Policy Institute. Judy Fetter, welcome to The Inside Scoop.
Pleasure to be here.
Folks, because she's live in the studio, if you have a burning question for her, there is a little time left. The toll-free number is 888-488-6275. 888-488 Mark, if you want to call, you better hit those phones right away because we don't have a lot of time. Let me ask you, Ms. Fetter, why are you running for Congress?
Now, you look at this Congress, and what you see is a Congress with a reverse Midas touch. Everything they touch falls apart. Everything they claim is a solution makes problems worse. I think we can't afford a Congress that is functioning like that, and we can't afford a congressman like Frank Wolf who backs Bush's failed policies every step of the way.
Now, there's some that claim, I've heard people say, well, Frank Wolf, he isn't really a conservative right-wing Republican. He's a more moderate Republican. You accept that?
Well, I think the issue is not labels, and he has served the district for 26 years, but I think you got to look at the agenda he's backing. He votes with the Bush agenda 90% of the time. And you look at what's concerning the people in our district. Look at the gas prices that we're paying right now. It's a perfect example of all that's wrong, of the selfish mismanagement we've seen, giveaways to the corporate interests rather than watching out for us.
So how would you do it differently?
Well, I think we pay every time. We look what we're doing. We empty our wallets at the pump. We also pay when we keep our children indoors and our parents indoors when they've got the pollution in the summertime. We pay for these high oil prices when we are fighting in Iraq. So we've got what we need to be doing differently is we need to be investing in the future. We ought to be planning for alternative energy sources. We ought to be planning for conservation, investing in efficiency. We need to be doing that, not giving tax breaks to oil companies now, while we pay high gas prices.
Dean Fetter, that sounds really good.
Good.
I certainly agree with you. But even the president says things like, oh, we shouldn't be addicted to foreign oil. What specifically would you do in Congress to help wean us off?
The very first thing I'd do would be to take back the tax breaks to the oil companies, because when they're earning record profits, they don't need those kind of tax breaks. And I would be, with other members of Congress, we would be investing in conservation and in fuel efficiency. We can be setting fuel efficiency standards and saving on consumption.
So
and
requiring
us all better off.
Automakers to have cars that meet
that
a certain fuel standard.
Fuel efficiency standards. Those standards are way too low. We can do better. We need to be investing in alternative fuels and giving our companies, our auto companies, incentives to do that. we're just not doing what we need to be doing.
How about a windfall profits tax?
I think it's worth considering. I think essentially that we need to take the profits, so their profits are at record levels. We need to consider that and reinvest those revenues in exactly the work we need to do to get greater efficiency and conservation.
A lot of Americans are concerned about the war in Iraq, not just those many of us who have friends and family over there, but all of us, the cost, but lives in dollars. What to you, should we bring the troops home? Is it time?
Well, this is one painful situation, and it's connected to that oil situation because it is our dependence on foreign oil that's causing our children to be over there. We made a terrible mistake in going over, and we sent our young people over there without a plan to win, without a plan to reconstruct, and without a plan to come home. And what we need is to bring them out as safely as we can while stabilizing an area that we've made worse. It's a challenge, but we got to focus on it instead of just keeping on a course that is a failed course.
Do you think we could bring troops home in a year, 2 years?
I think we have to bring them home in a way that both protects them and stabilizes the region. And the more we hold this administration accountable for their failed policy, the faster we'll be able to do that.
Let me ask you this. A lot of people have noticed that workers are working harder. I mean, it's like they're treading water. It's every day people have to work harder, longer hours, just to make the same standard of living they had 5-10 years ago. What specifically could you do in Congress to help out the middle-class American who's just trying to make a decent living?
Well, middle-class goes back on it by the issue of the gas prices they're facing. They're paying more out of pocket. They're borrowing more. Their health care costs are rising. And what's going on in the Congress is we've got giveaways to oil companies, to prescription drug companies, to insurance companies. What I would do would be to take back those giveaways and focus instead on providing affordable health care, energy independence, affordable education, and stop the slide for our citizens.
Now, you mentioned that Congressman Frank Wolf has represented this district for quite a long period of time, and some say all politics is local. What could you do specifically for the residents of the counties that you would represent in Virginia to make their lives better on a local basis?
The residents of this county are sitting in traffic in ways that are just killing them. And now, in addition to add insult to injury, they're emptying their wallets at the pump. What I would do would be to promote at the federal level both better energy policy, energy independence, and work on transportation policy that, as Governor Kaine is promoting, improves the relationship between our growth and our roads and our schools and makes everything more rational for people so this isn't happening to
them
anymore.
Of course, you're dean of the Georgetown University Public Policy Institute. That must deal with a whole range of issues. What specifically have you done as dean, or what issues have you learned? What are you an expert in? In other words, to help us in Congress.
I am an expert. I am an expert as a policy dean, and we teach students how to make policy work, and what works and what doesn't, and why they should work hard to make the better policy get through better politics.
So you actually teach students how to
do
public policy.
I'm training the leaders of the next generation. My own area of expertise is health policy. I've been fighting for 30 years to get affordable health care for folks. We haven't got it yet, and it's not because we don't know how. It's because we need to change politics to do it, and that's a large part of why I'm running for Congress.
Do you support universal health care?
I support affordable health care for everybody. Everybody gets coverage, everybody pays, and we have health care that works for all of us.
Judy Feder, thank you very much for coming here
on the
Inside
Mark.
Scoop. I tell you, because you don't have a contested race in the primary, you haven't had as much time as some of the others, but come November, we'll definitely have you back.
I'll be counting on you. Thank you very much.
That's it for the Inside Scoop. Wherever you are, if you're in the state of Virginia, there is a primary election tomorrow. Get out and vote. I hope I've given you some idea of all the various candidates and their positions. But if you want more information, you can go to their website. Each and every candidate, their website has been flashed up on the air. You can Google them. You can find their websites. Look at the issues and decide for yourself. And if you take my advice, whoever you vote for in this primary, I think we need a change in Washington. Vote Democratic in the fall. This is Mark Levine, signing off.